before you get off the golf course today, you could have some moments that will change the course of your life.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes. With me, Peter Donahue.
Andy, excitement is in the air. Spring, trees are budding. You and I are about to get on an airplane, head down south.
Yeah, I'm excited. We're going to Sweetens Cove. I think we need to do a podcast like while we're going, you know, like in the airport, like a 15, you know, like the one I did with Pete.
Yeah.
On the way to Spring Valley, but this one will be better. So I think,
oh,
yeah, and then check in at night, you know, be watching the Purdue game, turn on the recorder, give our thoughts on the golf course and Zach Edey.
God, this sounds wonderful. It sounds just
it's gonna be
like,
great.
Yeah, it's a paradise.
So the reason we're here today is I actually got some listener feedback to our last episode. Someone contacted me with a few questions, and I wanted to follow up. So I guess I might as well open it up. Anyone else if anyone has questions or anything, send me an email. It's andy@thegolfpractice.com. Pretty easy to find. Be happy to. It's one of my goals is at the end of the episode to have a golf advice section where people just ask their questions. So yeah. If you want golf advice, I just think it would be fun to.
Well, I do too. I do too. But I remember Fred Shoemaker, wrote a wonderful book entitled Extraordinary Golf, in which he spent 300 pages trying to change people's minds about, the way they play golf on a golf course. And he put one thing in there. It was a video, and it was about the swing. And he observed that when you watch somebody throw a club, they really hit all the positions. And Fred said that's the only thing people remembered about the golf advice that he gave was that one tip about throwing. So all the other stuff that you and I love to talk about. Yeah. Nobody's calling for that.
Well, they might. You don't know.
Well, I think you're a new day.
One of
new
my
consciousness.
Favorite podcasts is a sports podcast by a guy, Ryan Rosillo. And at the end, they have a life advice section where people will just be like, hey, I was invited to go on a trip to take someone's place. But now, you know, the person who invited me is asking me to pay for it. You know, questions like that, and they answer it in a funny way. So I think, any golf questions would be great.
Welcome.
So anyway, the question that I got was basically the last podcast we talked about. I like detailed my trip to Mexico playing golf, the way I was able, got this like lesson from Hank Haney, one of the best coaches, historically, and
great lesson,
hitting the ball great, practiced a lot, did all the right things, and I thought it would transfer to the course, and it didn't transfer that well. So I was kind of, we talked about at the end about kind of finding the sweet spot too, of like what's the sweet spot being like, what's the correct change, and without doing too much. But they were asking, like, are you kind of saying that you shouldn't make changes to your swing? That was one of the questions that they had. And so my response, I guess this is going to be my response, or this podcast is going to be the response. But I want to start with you. What benefits are there of like changing your swing? Like you're always kind of, how old are you? 74.
Four.
And you're still kind
of
working on projects, right?
Yeah.
Has that always been the case?
Yeah, I think it has. I didn't. I came out of my youth without with a notion that there was a perfect swing for me somewhere out there, and that I should try to find it. There were plenty of people back then that were trying to point out that the swings on tour didn't look the same, and so people were still having success with swings that looked wildly different. So why were we hunting after this? And I think that that I was spurred by the same kind of things that I hear all the time. I'm not, I want to be more consistent. What does that mean? I want to be more reliable. I want to be able to come through, in the clutch and be able to hit a good shot. I'd like to be able to control my ball. You know, I seem to have a tenuous control over my ball, whereas I play with some people. I played with a guy one time in a mini tour my first year down in Florida. And there were three guys in the group, me and two other guys from New York, who had a skill level of about a 5 or 6 handicap. And the guy that we were playing with was a plus handicap. And the way he controlled his ball in the wind that day, he looked like he was playing on a different planet from the rest of us. So what was he doing? What did he know that was more than, what we knew? And by know, I mean somebody defined what you know is what you can do.
Sure.
It's not what you can say about it. Mm-hmm. And so at any rate, I was... I thought that there was something out there that I didn't quite understand, that people were talking about different kinds of swings, and I was trying to understand what they meant and trying to feel those things, but I had a limited capability, so I kept kind of chasing it down. And there was, there were swing options that I'd left as a youth, because someone told me that this was the right swing. So I went in that direction. And Jack Nicklaus, had a very tall, high-reaching swing, which John Jacobs said, the Englishman who was a tour pro and became one of the fathers of modern golf instruction, John Jacobs said, Jack Nicklaus is going to ruin generations of American golfers that have gone away from rotational action because Jack is the model of excellence. And so, and because our consciousness was such that we just chased after the most successful golfer. Mm-hmm. So
the, for you, kind of just like always seeking to improve, to find something better.
Yeah, always and curious, whether this would be, you get more out of me than that, so yes, that's it, yes.
And so I know earlier on in your career, you went to like different golf schools and tried different, as you're saying, different like methods of the swing, where I assume you just go to someone for a week and you kind of learn their method and see how it works.
Yes.
And then you do another one and you see how that works.
Yes.
Is that the way you still go about kind of changing your swing or trying to improve, or do you go about it in a different way?
No, I go about it in a different way. I think I learned from all of those things. As I went to these different schools, I've often told a story about, in a matter of 2 weeks going to two different golf schools. One was at Grand Cypress, where they digitized video and they had a composite of 150 tour swings that made a stick figure. And then they'd pull it taller or stretch it wider or narrower to make it fit your body. Mm-hmm. And then they'd superimpose it over your video image, and you would seek to model or trace all of these positions and these movements. Then I went to another golf school the next week, where the teacher did physical screens of your body type and your sense of rhythm and pacing, and actually after these measurements or physical screens, they would put you into a swing that matched your physical screen. So if you were, let's say, tall and had short arms, your swing was going to be more vertical. And if you were shorter, you know, it was going to tend to be more around and like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yes, these, and Jimmy Ballard, you know, Jimmy Ballard had a notion of swaying or loading into your trail foot and then rotating in a very level fashion through the ball. And so, you know, these were all different. So you experience golf as... That's what these schools were like. And so, you know, having had that experience at this point in my life, I have, you know, a different different physical and mental capabilities for change, I guess you'd say. You know, like, and I experiment with them all the time, and I experiment with them now you know, in two different ways. One, in a slow motion, you know, step by step way. Sometimes, you know, moving without a golf club, then moving with a golf club and not a golf ball, and then, you know, and then swinging at the piece of tape on the ground or a gate, and then the ball. And I do it that way. And then I also tease it out of myself with what we call what I call melee, which is a scatter of balls and stepping through them with very little forethought, but experiencing time, you know, the 2 seconds of action in different ways, and finding that, you know, you can make subtle changes in your swing, you know, even when you're walking and swinging, you know what I mean? And so I'm interested to in melee, kind of find out, well, where would my body go if it was just wild, you know, just with nothing but pure purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hit this ball through that keyhole, or I'm going to savage this ball and belt it as far down the field as I can.
And so you kind of do these exercises, and then something like pops up, or you uncover something.
I think of the swing, Andy, now more like, you know, it's an instrument, and you need to keep it in tune, and you need to tune it every day. And so, you know, having a way of going about warming your swing up or calling your swing forward, to me is applying different tools to it.
Yeah.
And each one of these things I consider a tool.
Yeah. I know you're not on Instagram, but I think the way that most like golf interested people like learn about the swing or go about like changing swings these days are little like 20-second video. It's basically the version of a Golf Digest magazine, you know, that we've talked about before, where they actually like to confuse people. Right now, it's not necessarily. It's just like the person's trying to grow their brand in like a catchy way, and it'll just be a swing where this person, there's like a red X at the top of the screen, and the person makes a over the top slice move, and then they like shake their head and like, don't do that, and then the show's like a check mark, and like, here, shallow the club this way, and that's, you know, that's the end. And so people see that and they think, oh, I need to work on that in my swing, and they go from there, which I'd say is not a good way to go about it. But that's not the way you're going about it.
Mm-mm.
You're, you know, almost like discovering things yourself through like the rhythm and timing and moving around.
Is yeah, and different pitches, say? different planes, different. I think about the swing athletically from the standpoint of hurling on the one end. You know, you're hurling a weight.
Yep.
It could be, you know, you're hurling a box of books out the window, you're hurling a medicine ball, you're hurling a discus, you know, you're, and then striking, you know, how would you, you know, take a stick and a stick with a face and manipulate or use this stick as an extension of your hands and your arms and or your body generally, and cause it to do what you're willing it to do. And so exploring what you're capable of and what certain extremes of workable movement mm-hmm. are.
So like as you're exploring, do you have like a breakthrough moment where you like you hit one in a certain way? You're like, well, that's something.
It suggests something.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Very definitely. It suggests something.
Yeah.
And I think those discoveries, I generally write words about them, mm-hmm. you know, because what else do you do?
Sure.
You know, I think, well, I could sketch it. I could draw it. I've often thought that, you know, the brushes that, that Asian Chinese ideograms, yeah. you know, use where the brush is, it can make thin lines, it can make thick lines, it can make, you know, very expressive yeah. lines. And mm-hmm. I've always thought that that kind of note taking or expression is much mm-hmm. better sometimes sure. than the lame words I'm trying to write down.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, when I guess it's been, I'm probably at the model stage of learn, you know, similar to yours. Like I did like Genkis's online thing and kind of learned about that way of swinging, which some of the ideas there of like using your legs, having a shut club face, turning through the ball, like that really like immediately was able to like hit the ball in different ways than I hadn't before, where you'd be like, okay, this is worth kind of going after.
Yeah.
A little bit, and then with Hank, I didn't really have. It was almost just like, well, hey, this guy's here. I want to try to learn something, you know. And from working with him, I was able to hit the ball. I was able to hit like a higher shot and a high draw, which I wasn't able to do before. I was able to hit a draw before, but I would just kind of put the ball back in my stance and I could hit this, you know, with like a 5-iron, I could hit this like a low draw. It's a pretty cool shot, but it wasn't like a high ball that could get on the green. And so like from him, I like saw that like, oh, something different. Like I was able to now do something that I couldn't do before. So yeah. That was the excitement, right? It's like, okay, let's do this. And then I think where I got off track was I think I brought in some things that he didn't necessarily even like tell me to do in the lesson that I just got from like watching him or from when we met with him about things about the grip and club face opening. Like he didn't even say anything about my grip, but I was like, oh, he prefers a more neutral grip because he told us that, right? And so I tried that, and that's part of where I was like, I think I got off a little bit, you know, of like, oh, I can take on more, mm-hmm. more of this.
Interesting.
But the biggest thing of like, basically like turning a little more and keeping my hands in front of my chest are what kind of have made the biggest difference of like being able to hit different shots and maybe hit a little more, I don't want to say more consistently, but just feel more capable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I suppose I needed to take my own, you know, my own coaching, the way I coach others. Like I would never give someone as much as I was like trying to give myself, right? Is that like for so many people, helping them move through just like the backswing where they keep their arms more in front or their hands more in front of their chest, they start hitting the ball better, like right away. And they're like, I've never hit the ball like this before. So to me, that's a reason to go for something.
Well, yeah. You know, it's as you step them along and you've
right.
identified that, you know, gosh, they can, if we improve this, it improves,
sure.
brings everything up.
Yeah,
that's, there you go. That's a wonderful way to step along, you know, in the journey, right? Until that becomes something that they can keep in, tune up every day, you know, keep it from becoming too tense,
sure.
too overdone,
yep.
you know, and become masters of
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they do, they'll the amount of attention space it takes in their brain will recede.
Yeah.
It'll start to move into the habit part of the mind.
Sure.
And now your attention space is freed up to try some other improvement.
Yeah, and it's hard because I think too many people are doing this on their own, or they're learning from a coach who's giving them maybe too much or not helping them learn something as good as they could. And so it like leads to confusion. It leads to just chasing after quick tips and quick fixes, and that type of stuff doesn't tend to last.
You know, the investment, it was a notion that that I got years ago, but the idea of investing in failure, you know, people are less inclined to invest in failure, you know, and rather if I don't see the external result, if that doesn't manifest quickly, mm-hmm. I'm going to look for a new secret. And, sure. And, you know, one of the things that was interesting about, you know, that I found interesting about my reading of the story about Ben Hogan mm-hmm. was that Hogan famously said to someone in an interview that he had a secret.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And if you read his the biography, at least as I read it, from I think James Dodson's biography of Ben Hogan, Hogan was always his exercise, his practice, his exploration famously as a practicer. He was he famously practiced more than anybody else. What that exercise did was produce constant revelation mm-hmm. and insight that he didn't have before. And so he was always discovering a secret.
Yeah.
And so he'd say it, and many people have said, oh, well, Hogan's real secret was this. Yeah. And who said that? Oh, his shag boy said that. Oh, and this other guy said, no, his secret was, you know, something else. And yes, because he was constantly generating new insights that sometimes would represent the whole swing to him, you know, because all the other stuff was organized.
Yeah.
So then this new thing that he noticed about how a pressure in his left arch or, you know, in his right upper thigh, mm-hmm. how the muscle, he suddenly realized this internal rotator of a muscle that most people don't even know about. Hogan realized that if he was able to feel that muscle engaged, he was much more stable and powerful. Mm. You know, well, he discovered that muscle because one day he'd exercised enough that that muscle popped out in his mind on him. Mm. You know, he probably didn't even know he had that muscle, and I'm sure he couldn't tell you what the muscle was. So at any rate, I think that you need to have, if your approach through this golfing life is going to be impatiently throwing away whatever path you are on mm-hmm. to find some one thing that's going to make all the tumblers work for the rest of your life, good luck to you. You know, I don't think there's no coherence to that. There's no real understanding of what you. It's just like, no. I found some lucky charm today, and I picked this dime up off the sidewalk. I've been playing great golf ever since. Hmm. You know, that's all that's worth to me.
Well, that's how everyone goes about it, though. That's.
Well, is that good for us or bad for us? Well, we'll get a bunch of it.
I think it's good for us because when they see quick results. But I'm just trying to help, trying to almost summarize, like, not summarize, but come to a conclusion of, like, how do you go about finding, like, the right thing to be to work on. You seem to have your practice of moving and striking and things like that. And if you come to a lesson with me, I'm going to help find the right thing to work on. I think it's usually there's some for me when I help people, maybe I'll just like go about what I actually do, and then we can come. Maybe there's a practice to be found from that. Sometimes people will have something that's clear, so obviously just like kind of wrong with their swing. Let's just say there are, I've noticed it a lot since working with Hank, of like takeaway is super inside and their hands, their arm, their left arm for a right-handed player gets really close to their chest. And that can cause whatever. I don't even want to say it can cause something. It's just, it just is not as good as it could be. And so when we just like move them through just like this kind of general like model of a way to do the backswing differently, they often like start hitting it better like right away. Even if they're not doing exactly what I told them to do, just by moving a little bit closer to this, they seem to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's that. That's kind of like an overarching, like, hey, some things are just too far off from how we see better players hit, right? This is different. Like the club face could be way open at the top of the swing. And it's like, okay, I've never seen a good player have that, so let's work on that. That's different than like a preference of like a strong grip or like a maybe a Genkis more like closed club face at the top. I'm not talking about things like that. Some things that are just like way off. And then from there, it's like everyone will have a like something that they do wrong more often than others. Like they hit too far behind, they slice, they hit it off. And then the next change would be to address that.
Right.
And I think that's my current practice.
Well, I think it sounds like a good practice, because as Hank, you know, one of the things that's wonderful about watching Hank is his organization.
Yeah.
You know, he's working from these ideas of like, hey, we're going to eliminate penalty strokes, we're going to eliminate three putts, yeah, and eliminate two chips. And yeah, penalty strokes are your big miss.
Yeah.
They either hit you out of bounds, that's two penalty strokes. You hit it into a hazard, a water hazard, that's one penalty stroke. You hit it into some trees, and that's a half a penalty stroke because you've got to pitch out and you're not able to attack the green. And so, you know, as you handle your miss, like you're saying, your mistake, you're hitting behind it or you're slicing it or whatever, that's the doorway into an exploration of a golf skill. Like, mm-hmm, if you're hitting behind the ball, you're not skillfully managing your reach,
mm-hmm,
you know, sure, to the ground, to the low point in your arc. If you're slicing the ball, then you know that's a manipulation. You know, that's a skill, a specific skill, and you can address that. And there are alternative ways of addressing it. Right. And so, sure, you can explore which one works for you, which one's easiest, or which one does it quickest, or mm-hmm, does that fix cause any unintended negative consequences that we should be concerned with?
Yeah, I think where you need a coach or a second set of eyes is that there's so many different ways that something could be caused, right? I think on the internet or in magazines a lot, they'll be like, well, you know, are you like, do you have inside takeaway causes a slice? And so now do your takeaway this way and now you'll start hitting it better. That's like so then someone will take that and they'll go work on that. But in my opinion, like I have students with inside takeaway who hit hooks. And I also have students with inside takeaway who hit slices. So the inside takeaway is not necessarily related to either one of those things. And so that's where like a online video or a magazine can't, you know, you're just guessing that that's one of the, you know, 20 different ways that, you know, the takeaway
that this caused, applies, right, to me.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's not sold that way by the fisherman.
It's like, yeah, this will apply to everyone. Right. So practice it and then you get off. But
yeah. Yeah. It's a form of fishing.
Yeah.
isn't it? Yeah. It's where marketing and where trying to leverage your time or monetize mm-hmm. your intellectual property goes off the rails.
Sure.
It ceases to be responsible because it's just feeding an addiction or a weakness that you can predict in human beings,
sure.
that they'll be baited to reveal their personal information. They'll be baited into chasing the latest shiny thing that comes across. There's my friend Leroy Rosasco, who said, Peter, some things we make for selling and some things we make for playing and some things we make for selling. And that kind of stuff is just a sales technique. It's only if you understand, one of the things for me that's so impressive about, you need to understand Hank in his Hank Haney in the full context of his understanding.
Yeah.
In order to appreciate any specific thing, I believe, he's saying. If you do understand him
mm-hmm.
by reading his books, by listening to, all of his stuff, I believe that you could have the wherewithal to apply this stuff to yourself. But just to pull it out of thin air and say, that this particular thing is going to, necessarily help you,
mm-hmm.
I think is that's where it all kind of crumbles as far as oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But, on the other hand, Andy, there is in learning an effect that someone told me years ago, and I'm not sure I'm getting this right, but they called it the Gazartnik effect. And that is, if you tell anybody anything and that one thing substitutes for all the stuff that they've been saying to themselves, that they'll get short-term improvement. Hmm. Anything.
So if you just tell them, hey, interlock your fingers, that'll help them because they'll quiet their
mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'll only be thinking about that one thing.
Yep, yep.
They may, have a greater sense of ease and rhythm. And if they have confidence, then, mm-hmm. and blah, 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 and on and on and on.
Yep.
So that's that. I'm always a little bit skeptical when I hear, students come back and say, gee, your lesson just did everything for me. I've been telling everybody about what a genius you are. And we've only had one lesson.
Yeah.
And I think, oh my gosh, this is going to crumble right before my very eyes.
Sure.
Because, their mind's going to find its way back to the old thoughts.
Yeah.
The simplicity, the naivete, the wonderful naivete they've been playing with is going to be short-lived because the body is going and the mind is going to continue to try to go back to the old and familiar while telling itself that it's doing the new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so the swing might not even look that different. But even a small, the more I see, even a small step towards something better can, the student will make changes to what they're doing to the ball, which is maybe another way people get off a little bit is I think using video and you talked a little while ago about you had a student, you put them on video every lesson and you drew the lines and one day you finally got him exactly on the lines, but he still couldn't hit the ball. And so, but that's just an example of you're trying to fit into this perfect form when actually maybe the practice is just to move a little bit closer to it, each time you practice, as opposed to doing something totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, once somebody, you know, starts to make that change and you do see an improvement, you know, there's a reason for it. You know, it's changed the timing. It's changed, you know, changed different things. And, you know, it's a useful, it's very often, especially if it's applied by someone who's knowledgeable, like a coach that's a knowledgeable coach. It's a good pathway to be on. Yeah. Now the question, you know, now when you're navigating down that pathway, it's like, are there pitfalls?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are pitfalls, mm-hmm. and it's helpful to have that coach to help you to continue to move down that path and not slide back to the old path.
Yeah.
Or overdo.
Yeah. Or then address like the future problems that come up a little bit. Like,
yes.
Yeah, I love how, like Hank talks about, he's just like, hey, there's nothing we can't find an answer to. Sorry to say, you know, like there's not anyone who would, you know, Hank talks a lot about like, I can get someone to, you know, stop slicing faster than anyone, you know, and I'm not quite ready to challenge him yet, but I feel
you're moving. I'm moving there.
Like, yeah, like. He, you know, sometimes watching his lessons, he'll be pretty happy when someone's like, oh, yeah, this guy's hitting draws. He's never hit a draw before. And I'm like, yeah, I have lessons. Like, we all have lessons. We can do that, too. So, but, like, hey, someone comes and they're hitting behind the ball or they're slicing. Like, we can, let's say they're hitting too far behind the ball. We can change that really quickly. You're no longer hitting behind the ball. But now you're hooking it too much. Or something, because now you're hitting down on it, whatever. But we can make, you know, we can change that as well, and then we can work it and find the middle ground, and now you're off, so.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, and.
So what I'm saying is no one should change anything unless I'm helping them.
Well.
Me, I'm the guru, that's my conclusion.
Well, you know, the. I think in the Golf and the Kingdom, you know, they came to a point, I think it must be in singing the praises of the game, where they say, the hell with ever trying to get better. Mm-hmm. You know, after they've been, you know, talking the other side of the argument all night long. And and so, you know, I think that that's a healthy place to stand, too. You know, after you've been grinding and, you know, and working on changing and all that stuff, why don't you just get off that for a while and just say the hell with trying to get better and, you know, see and live life as that.
Yeah.
You know, and see what sort of experiences you have, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's because that's what we're doing. You know, we're trying on different things and living our games as a guy who's trying to fix his hook.
Sure.
Or as, you know, somebody who is, you know, trying to overcome the yips or, you know, whatever it is. Or as somebody who throws their clubs all the time and gets pissed off about every mistake they make. How's life working for you? You know, how is it living life as that guy, Daniel Bergman?
He's getting better.
Is he good? Yeah, good. Well, you know what? And that's what I want.
Well,
you know.
That's a student who, you know, used to get mad a lot. His baseball coach noticed him not getting as upset. And he asked him why. And he said about stuff I learned from golf.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, you know,
he's reaching the point. He's reaching the point where he's no longer the bad example. For someone, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, well, it's a wonderful success story when a guy can do that, because you know I always, you know, the acid test for me is, you know, as far as like being impatient and stuff, mm-hmm. is like, well, it's actually working for you.
Yeah.
It's moving you forward in a positive way. But mm-hmm. if you're stopping yourself and you're making yourself weaker by, you know, by doing that, then it's like, well, you know, how am I going to get stronger? Well, work on that, you know, and it's a wonderful thing when, you know, when people can do that. And it's not just, you know, because it's not just, I think, covering up, you know, the fact that you're boiling underneath. It's taking care of the boil.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like, no, I got a way to bring the boil down, you know, by framing the situation or something like that. And I don't see how it's different, honestly, than anything that you're doing in the game, whether it's a physical move or something that you're doing in the think box, the play box, or whatever I call it, the reflection box after, you know, it's over. You know, where's the correctable error? And, you know, and sometimes it's that you're just trying to do too much.
Yeah. All right, final question. If someone, let's say, if someone wanted to change their swing using what I'm calling the Donahue method, what they can't come see you. They're on their own. They're not gonna look on YouTube videos. They're not gonna do Instagram. They've heard you talking about melee and you know, hitting a ball to a keyhole and smashing it as hard as I can and hurling and striking. What would you recommend they do, or how would you have them start?
You know, I think if you where you start is on one of the, what I think of as one of the three things that we were trying to do in the game, and I think of them in terms of reaching, angling, and whooshing or swooshing.
Okay.
And so, you know, to me, the solid contact is your skill and ability to reach in a dynamic way. Yeah. You know, it's not just standing and reaching. You're moving, you're turning, and you're shifting, and a lot of your, you know, athleticism, your ability to move in your joints and to be stable on the ground and to be able to access the strength of your, you know, the chain that goes up from your feet through your legs and your hips and your torso and out through your arms and down through the club. And so you have to make an analysis of what it is that you want to improve. Is it solid contact? Is it direction? Is it appropriate distance?
Yeah.
And have some ways to exercise in that area, and then incorporate your exercise into a swing at a ball, and then a swing at a ball to hit a target, and et cetera, et cetera. I think, you know, we all have some notions of how to do things.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to start with a person's notions, you know, and like, what do they do and what do they do well? So I don't have an answer for you as far as like right away, you know, but diagnosing the problem is the problem. If the problem is everything, then you have to decide whether it's going to be direction, solid contact, you know, or appropriate power.
Yeah.
And so once you make that decision, then, you know, then you look for paths.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you're going to look online under the catalog of all things about solid contact, as a for instance.
Yeah. But I think it's simple, but like the student starting with like the analysis and the idea of what they need to do and making that choice for themselves and then going from there, that's different than, you know, just like pulling up your phone and scrolling and seeing what pops up at you and being like, oh, that I should use the ground more. That's a good idea. Let me try that. Like that's the opposite.
Yeah, I think you need to educate yourself. I mean, you can continue, you know, you can continue to grab for ideas randomly and to anything that someone successfully markets in your direction. You know, would you like, hey, listen, I've got something that's going to add 15 yards in to your game in 15 swings.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a – oh, man, that's yeah. shiny. I'm going to yeah. grab at that. Yes, you can continue to do that, but I think that and if you find that to be fun mm-hmm. – you sort of enjoy that, then I'm not going to tell you to not do that. But if you come to me and you've got a bitch about that,
yeah, sure.
And you said, well, you know, you're not acting like a person who's really serious about getting better.
Yeah.
You're acting like a person who is an indiscriminate, impulsive buyer.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure, yeah.
And so that's always, you know, something to me that I think, you know, when people are unhappy, they're usually misaligned, right? Their actions are not consistent with what they say their goals are.
Their goals are to get better, to you know, break 80, and then they do it by
being an impulsive buyer?
Yeah.
Right. By not going to someone qualified that's going to work from where they are,
right,
with an informed point of view, and say, listen, you know, I've seen this before, you know, and I've seen it solved in different ways, and so let me do some tests on you, and let's try some things. Those are different ways of saying tests.
Yeah.
And see what you resonate with, and you know, and what might fit you best. And I know, you know, because I've got an inventory of things that I can choose from, and it's informed by, as Hank, how many lessons has he given in his life?
70,000.
I mean to tell you, you don't think he has, and he'll you know, look you straight in the eye and say, no, it's because I've done that. Yeah, that's why I'm as good as I am,
sure.
And you know, not because I've got some secret that I read on a cave wall that was written by,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
nobody knows this but me.
Right.
But that still continues to be an effective marketing.
Sure does.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Pete. I think that's a great place to end.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks for your time. See you next. See you tomorrow.
Yeah, see you tomorrow at the airport. 'Fore you get off the golf course today, you could have some moments that will change the course of your life.